I'm Caitlin Mills, and this is the Fine-Tuned Music Series on 103.3 Waco Public Radio. Today, I'm visiting with local indie pop artist Colin Selman. Let's take a listen to his single, Cellophane.
Lovingly wild. You can't water plastic flowers. You can't mix it with salt. Everything was hazy. Been down like this every night lately. I can't admit it's you, but it's you. Like a ribcage of cellophane, it's you, it's you.
Welcome, Colin, to the KWBU studios for the Fine-Tuned Music Series. We're really glad to have you here.
Howdy.
So Keep Waco Loud, we've been working with them to bring on local musicians for this series, and they suggested that we reach out to you. And so I want to start off with discussing the song that we just heard, Cellophane. It's an immediate success for you. It already has over 80,000 streams. How does that feel?
Feels great. I mean, I couldn't have predicted that, I guess. It's wild. You know, Keep Waco Loud's a big part of that.
And so you're originally from here, right?
Right.
Were you more in, like, is it Waco or is it, like, Hewitt or, like...
I was born in Fort Worth, but then I moved to Hewitt when I was, you know, I went to kindergarten at Spring Valley. So, yeah, I mean, I've lived in Woodway, Hewitt area my entire life.
And so I understand that whenever you were 14... you had an accident happened. You're 20 now, or 19, almost 20 now. So what happened whenever you were 14?
Well, when I was 14, me and my friend Jackson Sullivan were riding around on a Polaris. Do you know what a Polaris is?
Can you explain it to me?
A Polaris is like an ATV, but it's kind of like a Jeep, but it's a...
But
it's
smaller.
Smaller, but okay. It's an ATV. We were doing 14-year-old things and whipping the thing around and decided to go out on the road and see how fast it would go, and flipped it and hurt my ankle, was pinned under it, and they had to do the whole nine yards, fly a helicopter out, surgeries, all sorts of things, which is actually why I became a musician.
Yeah, I mean, was that really traumatic? I mean, that sounds like it.
Yeah, it was pretty traumatic. I mean, I was from, because I was going into freshman year, and so from the first day of freshman year to the last, I was on crutches, and so, because I had to go through several surgeries, and but that's when I picked up the guitar, you know, because I wanted to be a baseball player before and couldn't anymore. So
from your accident and everything that came from that, like, you know, like you said, being on crutches and having multiple, how many surgeries did you end up having?
12.
12 surgeries.
That was a lot. I mean, they ended up having to fuse my ankle, which fusing is like, I didn't have any cartilage between my talus and my tibia. And so I had to, every time I try to walk, my bones would hit. And so they had to fuse it and, like, go in there and basically set the bones to where they would grow together. So now I can't bend my left ankle. But, I mean, I walk fine, but...
Yeah. Does it still give you trouble at all?
I mean, it hurts every now and then, but no. It's perfect. I mean...
Well, yeah. That's the good news out of it,
yeah,
all, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
So from that experience, how do you think that's impacted your music?
I mean, I was bedridden for months, you know? And so, I mean, that's when I started... watching, you know, videos and becoming influenced by the artists that I, you know, fell in love with.
Can you name a few?
The big one at the time, his name was Matt Corby. He's an Australian singer-songwriter, and he's incredible. All I did was watch Matt Corby. And from then on, I mean, it went everywhere. It went from Bon Iver to Lord to Frank Ocean to, you know, Kendrick Lamar, all sorts of people.
Yeah. So why did you choose to stay with indie pop?
I mean, I think it's just, I would say it's indie pop, but, like, I think as music gets released, people realize it's not exactly, like, genre. But it's just a combination of all the influences, I guess. It's like I said, Lord is indie pop, I suppose, but it's just kind of how it happened.
So whenever you're doing the musical composition of this and you're talking about, like, the influences, how long does it take you to mix down sounds? Are you, like, taking, like, days or weeks? Or does it, I guess, maybe just depends on what song mm-hmm. you're writing at the time. What's that like? I mean, how do you play with those sounds? How do you create those sounds?
We got me and my producer Jonathan Camacho. We work at Dallas, and we got in the studio probably 2.5 years ago. So, you know, I mean, we made Daydream and Cellophane like last year. So yeah. Like, it's a long process. I mean, because you know, some songs you do 5 versions of. You know, you change it around because there's so much you can do. You know, I can make hitting a table sound cool, like, and you know, it kind of just depends. Like Cellophane we made in like a day, but I wrote Cellophane as a acoustic ballad, you know, like, and then it just changes. It just evolves as you play around with different sounds. And that's Jonathan, man. He's a wizard.
How did you get connected with Jonathan?
I was in a music school in Dallas for a little bit, and he was my songwriting teacher. And we vibed, you know, and I wanted to learn everything I could from him. And you know, then it was like, I want to make music. Who can I make music with? Mm-hmm. And it was like Jonathan. And that's just pretty much how it happened.
Yeah. I do want to go into the lyrics of Cellophane because I've been trying to rack my brain as like what this means. And so I think it's interesting where you go, like a rib cage of cellophane. Mm-hmm. Is it because like the song is like your rib cage is open, like you can see what's inside of it?
Yeah, I mean, because rib cage, because cellophane is clear plastic, right? So if your rib cage is made of cellophane, then it's see-through, it's transparent.
And vulnerable.
You can see the heart, right.
Because cellophane is easy to tear through and
right,
all of that.
Sure.
Do you find that a lot of your lyrics, is it more like the topics that you discover maybe is like relationships or?
I mean, it's, yeah, a lot of it's centered around girls, because I guess the time of my life, you know, I'm young, so that's just naturally that's what happens. But it's everything. It's beliefs. It's the state of society. All sorts of angsty teen things. You know, like
yeah.
It's it just depends on kind of what's on my mind at the time, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think that artists nowadays, especially like younger artists like yourselves, do you find yourself wanting to write things about the current political climate or social climate?
Yeah, I mean, more so, I rather than, you know, making like stand-up songs, more so just not necessarily pessimistic, but just analytical or like fly on the wall type viewpoints. And just how I see it, I guess, which is all you can do. Maybe someday it'll end up being like, you know, have some sort of message in regard to how I think things should be, but
yeah,
not right now. You know, it's just viewpoints.
Yeah. So in Central Texas, where do you often play here?
I've played at Common Grounds a lot, or I did. I did a lot of mics. I haven't really gigged around here that much. I gigged for a little bit in Dallas, but, you know, right now we're just trying to get the live show together because, I mean, you've heard it. It's a lot of different sounds and things that you have to learn how to convert to a live setting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, what's the process of that like? Is it, do you want it to be more live instead of, like, playing, like, singing along with, like, the track of your
It's hard, I mean, because you know, you want to show off musicianship as much as you can, and you know, so you have to bounce out each sample from the record and then figure out how you're going to play that live. And, you know, you have to obviously have, like, electronic drums and you know, different things to play those samples. And so it's a lot of, like, getting gear together and then how do you emulate the vocal production live and, like, having all those harmonies when it's only you or,
yeah.
You know. So a lot of, like, live looping and things. And so it's a process.
Is it, like, this might not be one of your influences, but I've seen, like, whenever Ed Sheeran performs and he has, like, that step board to do all the... Is it something like that is kind of what you're doing?
Ed Sheeran was actually, like, my first big influence.
Oh, really?
He was my first... Like, whenever I was, like, in bed... Because that's when Multiply came out. Like, Multiply came out when I wrecked. And I remember, like, because that was my record that year. You know, that's all I listened to. And I watched Live in Dublin or something. There was like a live performance on YouTube of him, and I watched that over and over and over. I watched all his live performances, and which is how I got started into looping, because he has a Boss RC30 loop pedal, and bought that loop pedal, bought the little mini guitar he plays, and I was like, I'm going to be Ed Sheeran, you know. It's just not what happened, but no, yeah, absolutely. It's along the same lines.
So before your accident, were you interested at all in music, or were you just more like, I listen to music and I enjoy it kind of thing?
I mean, I'd always sang, you know, and like, I think in like seventh grade, I was like, I'm going to learn how to play guitar for the talent show. But it was never like, oh, I'm going to be a musician. And then, you know, as I grew up, it was like, oh, I could do this as a hobby. But, you know, then I wrecked. Then I was in New York visiting my sister, and this music school that I went, because the music school I went to, I you know, found through a camp. They had a summer camp, and they had offered me a spot in this program that they had that was kind of a big deal in Dallas. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to have to. And that was kind of the start of everything, and became homeschooled and just started doing it.
So you mentioned that you don't play often here. Is that the correct way that you would say that?
Right, yeah.
Okay. Why do you think that that's the case for you?
I mean, a lot of it's personal. A lot of it's, you know, a lack of demand, I guess, which is once again, like, Keep Wake Aloud and things like that are changing that. There is a demand because people want to see live music, but a lot of it is there's not specific types, you know, like there's a lot of country, obviously, and there's a few select venues that do more experimental things, but you know, if there was some big venue that, you know, consistently played different types of artists, then obviously it would be a goal, I suppose.
So that's what you think that Waco needs, is like more venues for other types of genres.
Just, yeah, more space for that.
And so I want to go back to your influences, because I think you've only mentioned a few. I think I read on your artist bio that Frank Ocean was a big...
Yeah, he's my biggest. He's my number one.
Yeah. Is he, like, one that's really impacted your lyrical composition? Okay. How so?
Frank is a different type of lyricist. Yeah. You know, a lot of times he does... It's like a chain of association type of thing. Like, he'll say one thing, and the next line will have no relation to the previous line other than, like the best example is on Nike's when he says me and them gel, like hair gel, and then he says like twigs with the bangs. And it's like FKA Twigs, this artist has like gel in her hair, and it, like, me and them gel. He wasn't saying anything about hair gel, but that, you know, eventually leads into him talking about hair gel because of the word itself rather than like what he's talking about. And so he has very, very hip-hop centered lyricism, but also folk, and I think that's why he influences me so much, because I am heavily influenced by folk and hip hop.
Yeah.
And so he merges the two really well, and in a way that no one else can really emulate. And so trying to emulate Frank is finding your own unique sound in a lot of ways. So
do you agree with the statement that musicians are also poets?
Yeah. I mean, I think it sounds like, you know, woo-woo or whatever, but art is art. So, you know, if you're writing a song or a poem or a novel or any sort of, you know, your own original thoughts being put down on paper in a way that you want to influence any sort of viewer is, I think, whatever sort of connotation of what word you use is irrelevant. Because, you know, poetry is... I guess just calculated use of words to influence your reader.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that all music would translate easily to poetry, or is it more rap music is more poetry than what people give it credit for? Maybe.
I guess I haven't thought about it. It's because once again, it's connotation. Because poetry, like, you know, people could, you know, hear the word poetry and only think of like Robert Frost, you know, and like,
yeah.
And so whereas you put J. Cole lyrics on a piece of paper and it sounds like rap lyrics. And so, but I do think they all come from the same place.
But if you did it without like the music track, then it would sound a lot probably like spoken word.
Sure, absolutely.
Because they kind of use...
like some slam poetry or something. Yeah. There's a rhythm behind it for sure.
Yeah.
Which is another similarity, because there's rhythm.
So as an independent artist here in Waco, what are some of the challenges that you've faced, and also some of the good things about it?
I mean, it's all sort of a double-edged sword, because right now all independent artists have access to the same things that big artists have access to,
like
with the exception of labels. But I mean, the cell phone has changed everything.
Yeah.
You know, and streaming. Streaming is God now. So it's like you have the ability to become famous with your own, you know, ability. And so it's changed in the sense that everyone has access. But it's become a saturated pool because everyone's trying to do it now. Whereas 10 years ago you were playing live to try and get noticed. And now it's like you don't have to get noticed because all the only people labels sign are, you know, famous people, or at least the big labels. You know, there's some independent labels that are doing work, but mm-hmm. it's the biggest shift has been streaming, obviously. And so like the ability for a 19-year-old kid in Waco, Texas to have 80,000 streams is insane. But also there's a lot of 19-year-old kids doing that. Like there's a lot of people doing that exact same thing. And so it's harder, but it's easier.
Yeah.
And so
with that, we are going to take a break to listen to your next song, which is Daydream.
Cool.
And so we'll talk more about that after the break.
Teenage daydream, stop lights flashing, red on red, and the poor man watching from his cardboard bed. Painting blood white lipstick on the back of your wrist, and you don't miss a thing while you're tonguing the cut in your mouth. Picture perfect new flame, like a teenage love scene, cause we're playing each other like we're so lovely.
We just heard from Daydream. That was a single that was released on August 2nd and was added to the Spotify's indie pop playlist. How did you discover that song had been added to that playlist?
It was because when the song came out, we were throwing a party at my house, and just like a lot of my best friends were there. And it was like, I think it was like 1 a.m. or something. And one of my friends was like, "Yeah, Colin's already on a playlist." And I was like, "Oh, cool." They're like, "Yeah, you're on an indie pop playlist." I was like, "Cool." And I like went to like look at it, and I looked at it, and I like clicked on it, and I was like, "Oh, like this is like it has like 900,000 followers," and because I didn't realize, I thought it was just like some random playlist, and yeah.
And so, what happened after that? Did time freeze?
A big celebration. Yeah. No, everybody flipped out because yeah. That's the goal. That's the goal. That's how you get noticed. So
since that's happened, have you been monitoring it at all? Have you gotten calls? Have you gotten any type of?
Well, actually, yesterday I woke up at 1:30 as I do, and I like woke up and I looked at my text, and there was like 20 different texts from a bunch of different people, and they were like, "Oh, congratulations, congratulations." I was like, what is it? And the Spotify had put us on Fresh Finds playlist, and we were in the number one slot. So, you know, listens were going crazy. I think we got like 40,000 listens yesterday or something, like insane, on Daydream. And
is Fresh Finds another playlist?
Yeah, okay. It's another playlist for all independent artists.
Oh,
and
cool.
So, yeah, it's like it's a pretty big deal for an independent artist. And so, yeah, and since then I've gotten several emails from different managers, different, you know, like A&R people trying to talk to me, but I'm being cautious, I suppose, because you don't know.
Do you see yourself signing in the future, or do you see yourself remaining as independent as long as you can?
Yeah, for sure. Independent as long as you can, just because there's not really anything in it for anybody right now, because, I mean, other than, you know, staying independent, because you know, people contacting you right now are essentially saying, like, "I'm going to put you on." And, you know, if you make that jump right now, then you're essentially going to sacrifice a lot more than you would whether if you had, like, leverage later on in the future. You know, if I'm independently, we've already gotten this far. There's no reason why we can't get further. And so you get as far as you possibly can without the help of anyone else, because one, you reap all the benefits, and it's a pride thing as well, I suppose.
How big of an audience is there for indie pop here in Central Texas? You had mentioned that it was somewhat small, but
I mean, I think that it's as big as we allow it to be, I suppose. Like I said, you know, someone like Keep Wake Aloud is allowing people to. I wouldn't say there's a lack of an audience in regards to the music taste. Like I don't think that people dislike indie pop or anything or punk rock or whatever you want to say. It's more so the fact that they don't know it's here, or they don't know there's no way for them to go in regards to like seeing that live or experiencing that. But I wouldn't say there's a lack of, just because like I know what my friends listen to, and you know, you have your Baylor right down the street, and
yeah.
So which that's indie pop central, like, so it's more so just having a place to go for that.
Yeah. I do want to take a minute to talk about the lyrics of this one too.
Sure.
Some of this I thought was like kind of darker imagery, which was kind of cool.
Like
whenever you said that Lorde was one of your influences,
right.
I can see that in here. Can you explain the background of this song for me, please?
Sure. I mean, we were in the studio, and you know, we have a full record's worth of music, and it you know, I came in with Jonathan, and I was like, you know, we need some more pop, and so we, you know, started a beat, and it ended up just flowing really, really well, and we made Daydream, and you know, as a songwriter, a lot of the times you just kind of say stuff, and then you kind of see where you're led within yourself, mm-hmm. And I started with the pre-chorus, the painted bloodline lipstick, that whole section, and I just kind of came up with that bit. As you go, you kind of figure out what you're talking about, and then, but as far as the background, it was just teen things, you know, just girls and things like that.
Yeah, but like with this line, like, and you don't miss a thing while you're tonguing the cut in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. That's just my version of imagery, like. The scene looks to me as if, you know, painted bloodline lipstick on the back of your wrist, so like a girl with red lipstick who's wiped her mouth.
Oh, okay.
And then and you don't miss a thing while you're tonguing the cut in your mouth. So like, you know, she's sitting in a car or whatever, like looking out the window, like you know how you have like a cut in your mouth and you just like mess with it.
Yeah.
It's like that. I don't know why I wrote that. It was just kind of how it came out, and I enjoyed the sound of it.
Yeah, for this one that I thought was really cool too. Spinning Ivy on the system, mm-hmm. lost in our psyche, but we'll never miss them.
Yeah, Ivy is one of my favorite songs ever. It's Frank Ocean. So playing Ivy on the radio, obviously, and then lost our psyches, but we'll never miss them. It's just, you know, we're free, I suppose. We're young teens who've basically lost our minds and are doing dumb things, but we just don't care.
So it's a love song.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are these two pieces that we've played for this on that album that you are
yes.
working on?
Yeah, they're on the album. This is the first two singles. Hopefully I'll release a few more, and then hopefully we have enough traction to drop the album.
Do you guys have any plan, like when you do plan to release it? Like maybe in the fall or?
It really depends on where we're at, I guess, because I'm a firm believer in not giving all your eggs away at once.
Yeah.
Because you know? That's a problem for a lot of people. You know, they spend a lot of time making a lot of music, and then they just put it all out at once.
Yeah.
And they don't have anything else to put out, and they don't have, you can't expect 12 songs at once to all do individual different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's much easier to gain an audience one song at a time and to try and land playlists and to individually push those things to try and get people in. And so whenever you do release your bulk of music, you have people that are actually listening to it versus pushing the bulk at once.
Yeah.
It's also a lot to ask of a listener. I mean, you're a brand new artist and you're going to ask them to listen to a 12-song album without having any sort of validity. I mean, because you can't, you know, I know, like, if I'm on Spotify and I discover some random artist, I may listen to 30 seconds of a song and then decide whether or not I'm going to even listen to another one.
Yeah.
And so it's, you just have to play your cards right.
I think it's interesting that you say you don't want to, like, I don't know if you said pressure, but like you don't want to put that on someone who's listening to you for the
sure.
first time.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to consider the consumer. I mean, as far as especially right now, you know, we're short form. Everything is short form information. We don't spend more than 3 seconds looking at a post. Like,
yeah.
And so that's why the biggest songs right now are 2 minutes long, whereas the old standard was like 3:30. And so it's like now you have these 2 minute rap songs that are number one. And it's because we're short form now. We don't have the same attention spans we used to because of media. Like, it's just
Does that bother you?
No, I mean, you kind of just have to go with it. You kind of have to go with the tide. And if you're recognizing what's happening, like, it's you have leverage because you're able to adhere to that, you know. So
you said that you were in a music, did you say camp or?
Yeah, it was a music camp, yeah.
From that, do you think that you want to go on and maybe do some type of music education, or do you want to just stick with this and just?
Yeah, I'm definitely sticking with this. I mean, I'm not really at a point where that seems like a valid option to me, just because of, I don't know. I'm a firm believer that you have 100% of energy in a day, and I don't want to put any energy elsewhere other than what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah. What do you think are some preconceived notions of people who do indie pop music?
I don't know. I think...
That are false
preconceived notions. Yeah. I suppose that we're hipsters or something. You know, like the idea that the indie pop person is a hipster just trying to... That just seems like such a poser.
So, as for right now, is this how you're making your living? Or what else are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, right? But, you know, you don't get paid much from streams. It's like 0.0000 of a cent, which is...
Really?
Yeah. That's what we're trying to fix. You know, there's this thing out called the Music Modernization Act, which is basically paying songwriters and producers their fair share. Because, like, you know, iTunes just got taken down.
Yeah.
And so it's like, one, people aren't selling CDs anymore. You know, there was a little golden age of music where musicians were making a lot of money for their music, and now it's, you're not making anything. You know, you make money off a tour, off of merch, and, you know, vinyls or something, because, like, that's a trend. But you don't make money off of the physical streams. I think for, you know, you can get, like, 2 million streams and make, like, $1,000 or something, you know. So you're not...
So you have to get really high up there before you even see
Right, and so the goal is to go on tour. Like, that's where the money is, and placements and things like that, but... Yeah, I mean, I play the stock market. That's just kind of a side hustle, I suppose. But
that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
As a 19-year-old.
Yeah, I just.
Did you teach yourself?
I did, yeah. Yeah. Just YouTube and certain things like that. I think I saw the movie The Boiler Room with my dad, and I was like, yeah, I think I'm gonna do this, and just kind of what I do now.
So for my last question, one, what's in the future for you? But also, do you see yourself staying here in Waco for a little bit longer, or even in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, I'll stay here as long as necessary. I mean, I have a good situation here, and all my best friends are here, and the future is fully dependent on just what happens with the music, and I'm gonna keep pushing as hard as I have, and.
So do you think you're, like, not as much of a planner in that regard?
No, not at all. I mean, I've planned for far down the future, you know, in pipe dreams, but, yeah, it's just kind of whatever happens, but also expect the best. Because why not?
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this fine-tuned music series. We appreciate you taking the time
to
talk.
It's been wonderful.
Cool. I was never